Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. A documentary film produced by the BBC was released last year focusing on what it called the Delmar Divide, citing what amounted to de facto segregation in St. Louis north of Delmar Boulevard. Few in this town challenged that conclusion. Now that separation is looked at from a different angle. An interdisciplinary study has been looking at how social and economic opportunity are affected by the health of the region's African-American community. The fourth brief in the five-part study, titled For the Sake of All, is Segregation: Divided Cities Lead to Differences in Health. Previous briefs have looked at how health in that community impacts economic and educational opportunity, mental health, and school dropout rates. In studio to talk about the latest brief are its authors. Melody Goodman is assistant professor for surgery in the Division of Public Health Sciences at Washington University. Keon Gilbert is assistant professor of behavioral science and health education in the College for Public Health and Social Justice at St. Louis University. Will Jordan is executive director of the Metropolitan St. Louis Equal Housing Opportunity Council. And also with us is 21st Ward St. Louis Alderman Antonio French. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to see you again.
Good to see you.
Thank you very much.
Keon Gilbert, I'll start with you and ask you if you could give us kind of a brief overview of what the study has found up to this point.
Sure. So this particular brief looks at the issue of segregation and how segregation impacts health, and not only in St. Louis, but also thinking about the St. Louis region as well as nationally. And so one of the things that we found is that St. Louis is ranked ninth in terms of segregation in the U.S., and that's looking at cities, black and white segregation primarily, and that's from the U.S. Census report. So overall, what we wanted to do was to kind of take a historical look to think about what segregation means in a general context, as well as what segregation looks like here in St. Louis. So thinking about issues such as Pruitt-Igoe, thinking about Homer G. Phillips, and how that has had an impact on the health of the community here in St. Louis.
So, Melody, are we looking back then, primarily looking back at what was and how a previous time perhaps has affected health today?
We take a historical look at segregation, but the data we look at is quite current. So we're looking at, you know, U.S. 2010 census figures to measure segregation, and we're also looking at heart disease mortality and cancer mortality based on five-year estimates from 2007 to 2011 from the American Community Survey, which is also from the Census Bureau.
So how has it changed over time?
I think, you know, St. Louis is a hyper-segregated city. And so although segregation has decreased a bit, it is still quite segregated. Like Dr. Gilbert said, we're ninth of, you know, U.S. cities that have a high proportion of African-Americans among segregated areas.
Yeah. Is anyone uncomfortable, Alderman French, let me take this to you, using the term segregation? To me, that sort of implies a formal policy. I've used de facto because everyone seems to agree that this, in fact, is going on. But is it too strong a word?
I don't think it's too strong of a word. I think it's an accurate description of the situation. I think the feeling that you're feeling, though, is a common feeling, and I think too often we do feel uncomfortable talking about race or racial disparities in the city or taking a close look at our own situation. We have a tough time looking in the mirror sometimes because it's hard, but we need to talk about it more often. And so I think this study is a very important step for our region to look at what the actual problem is so we can come up with solutions.
Will Jordan, let me turn to you because your area is in housing.
That's correct.
Talk about discrimination in housing in St. Louis today. This is, after all, the city of Kelly versus Kramer. That's going back 65 years or so.
Yeah, that's right, Shelley versus Kramer. Well, so there's a lot of landmark cases decided here in the metro area dealing with segregation. And Melanie was right. In the past, for about 6 years running, we were about the fourth most segregated, and now we're ninth. So that means we're doing better. But the bad news is that the cities that we're ranked against are doing much better. So that we're still at nine means that, indeed, the hyper-segregation insists. And we find it here in our office. You know, we deal with that on a regular basis. We've got a grant. We're a FIP agency with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And so they, as well as the City of St. Louis and St. Louis County, fund us to both educate persons about the fair housing law, as well as to test for discrimination. And so we do find it on a regular basis, even today. in different areas of the city, and it's on both sides of the river that we find it. And so we know that segregation is still a real issue in St. Louis, not just upon it's based upon, you know, sometimes people are prevented from having opportunities by it being masked. And that's what we see today. We see opportunities that are masked and only revealed for certain people. You know, have to get the right code name, and then you get the great opportunity.
Keon Gilbert, is it different here in any way than it is in those eight cities that precede us in this ranking?
Well, I think part of it is, as Will and Melody both said, St. Louis is doing a little bit better, but still not that great compared to other cities. And so we didn't take an in-depth look at the cities that were ranked 1 through 8, but just kind of thinking about segregation as a whole across the country. And so though we've seen great improvements across the U.S. In terms of reducing segregation, there have been a number of things that have happened to do that. So, for example, instead of what we kind of see here in St. Louis with this real stark separation between city and county, other places they may be merging city and county. And so that creates other kinds of opportunities. And I know that's a hot issue here. And so me raising it, I'm sure that's going to, you know, incite some additional comments and things. But those are just those kinds of examples, or looking at other cities that are dealing with the effects of segregation on health. And so thinking about the impact that it has on full service grocery stores and what cities like New York are doing to increase fresh fruits and vegetables for their residents who may not have access to these full service grocery stores. So there are a number of things that are going on across the country that we could use as models here in St. Louis.
Melody Goodman, this takes us to the area of the health. We talk about access to food and food deserts and that sort of thing. That begins to address the health issues. What are some of the other health consequences of this divide?
And, you know, I just want to say that segregation shouldn't be a bad word. And it alone in itself is not the issue. Different people of different races living in different communities isn't the problem. The problem occurs when those different communities have different resources and different access. Sure, and sure. So what we find in predominantly minority communities is that sometimes banks don't want to lend in those communities. Economic opportunity is not happening in those communities. The parks may be the most unsafe place. So when we talk about physical activity, there may not be sidewalks. They're not likely to have a full service grocery store. So those are the real differences that matter. The fact that people of different races live in different places, that's fine. It's the fact that the opportunity that exists in those different communities is really different.
So that's the segregation we're really talking about, that the different resources that are available to different communities here.
Yes.
Okay. Now,
I completely agree, and I'm glad she said that, because it is about – ultimately, it's about disparities and quality of life for different folks. You know, if you're born into an area and your demographics or your geography determines what kind of quality of life you're going to have, that is a problem. Right. And for too many people, that is reality in St. Louis.
Yeah, that's true. And one of the things I also wanted to point out is, you know, the segregation that we're talking about today is just where you happen to live and what's available to you because of where you live. And we know that opportunities really are drastically different in St. Louis based upon where you live. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that we as an agency also like to reach out and talk to people about being active in the process. When things are happening on a city level, on an economic level, to be very active in that process, because we know that things will pass you by if you're not active in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me come back to you with regard to the health consequences of this. Well, what specifically are we talking about? We've talked about the idea, or at least alluded to the notion, that access to fresh produce, for instance, and the food desert consequences that we have talked about in the past on this program. What else is going on? We're talking about heart disease, and we're talking about other things.
So we know in public health that place matters. That has been documented well in the literature, right? And so we know that where you live impacts your social determinants of health. What we did in our analysis is we looked at mortality, which we think is the most absolute measure of health, right? And so we looked at where you live and how does that correlate with the rates of heart disease and cancer mortality in your community. And what we find is that predominantly African-American communities have higher rates of heart disease and cancer mortality here in the St. Louis region.
Keon, why? Why do they have the higher rates in these particular areas?
Well, when we think about many things that affect health. So one of the other indicators that we looked at was just the concentration of poverty. And so thinking about all the things that make up poverty in terms of low education, fewer job resources or opportunities, or jobs that don't pay so well. And so that affects your access to healthcare. And so people aren't taking advantage of preventative healthcare services. And so people aren't finding out, for example, that they may have, you know, certain risk factors for heart disease or cancer until it's too late often. And so that's why we, so some of the reasons why we see these high rates of mortality. And so it also begs the question and raises the question, what can we do to kind of intervene and think about opportunities to reduce people's risk for heart disease and cancer, as well as providing opportunities to access to health care, access to better jobs, as well as education. And so it's a much broader picture.
So the key here really is economics.
I wouldn't say it's the only thing.
No, I say it's a key, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
If the resources, absolutely, financial resources aren't there, people aren't going to go to the doctor for preventive causes, or maybe even when they're sick, not be able to afford or feel they can afford to go to a doctor.
Yeah, it absolutely opens up the idea of access.
But I think it's more than just economics. So we could build great hospitals in predominantly minority communities in North St. Louis. If when they go there, they don't receive good care or they're not treated well, they're not going to want to go. So it's more than just putting financial resources there, but making sure that the care we give is quality care, that the people who give that care are culturally competent, from the front desk staff all the way back to our physicians, right? So it's not just that if we build it, they'll use it. We have to make sure that we build it in a way that makes it friendly, that makes it useful to people of different cultures.
That's correct. So many times, I think, this is Will with the EOC, we deal with a lot of issues, and for example, in some of those segregated communities where the health disparities are so high, one of the things you don't see is, say, urgent care facilities so that people can have access to emergency services without calling the ambulance or overtasking those emergency services. Well, that's something that the private community has to step in and say, hey, you know what? We need to build more urgent care facilities throughout the North County area, because there's just not that many. And certainly we're wearing out the paramedics. So I think that's it's kind of the synergy of the community understanding that it's not an area that will just mend itself. It needs the participation of the entire community.
You say it's the responsibility of the private community
as well. That's right. That's correct. To also assess the needs, right? If you're looking for an urgent care facility, is going to make a profit, but will they see it as a valuable place to go? Because the management staff is going to have to deal with integration issues. They're going to have some black managers and some white managers, and they're going to have to work together. If they say to themselves, I don't want to deal with that kind of issue, then they won't build one there. So that's one of the things we always are looking at here in St. Louis.
I have to take a break. Let's do that now. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking about the latest brief in the Forsake of All study examining how segregation in St. Louis impacts the health of African Americans. With me in studio, you just heard from Will Jordan, Executive Director of the Metropolitan St. Louis Equal Housing Opportunity Council. Also with me in studio is Professor Melody Goodman of Washington University, Professor Keon Gilbert of St. Louis University. They are the authors of the most recent brief in the Forsake of All study. And also with us is Antonio French, who is the alderman representing the 21st Ward of the City of St. Louis. Back to continue our conversation, we'd love to bring you into it as well. So give us a call if you'd like to join us at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation on the Forsake of All study, which has been examining health and as it relates to economic opportunities in the African-American community here in St. Louis. We had a caller, apparently, who wondered about my reference to Shelley versus Kramer a couple of moments ago. I think we have to go back to 1948 and the Supreme Court decision, which ruled against restrictive covenants, which prohibited the ownership of property in certain parts of town, and St. Louis was certainly a keen example of that, and the case was decided in favor of eliminating restrictive covenants. So that's what that was all about. Antonio French, let me come back to you with regard to why aren't there, looking at it from the governmental point of view, if you will, the legislative point of view, why aren't there more and better facilities on the north side?
Well, the fact is that the north side has been neglected for many, many years. The north side of the city has suffered from maybe a system of benign neglect, and some of it, I would say, is not even so benign for 40 years. The fact is you have roughly a third of the city's population living north of Del Mar, and just until recently there was no urgent care facility at all. And now they have at least one just opened up on Dr. King Boulevard, but by no means does that meet the need. And so when you talk about how that affects the health of the community, you know, it is true that the emergency rooms is where most folks get their health care. And that is not preventative health care. That's after something's already happened. So that's a problem. The other thing I would add to the discussion, too, is one of the biggest things that affects the health of the community is violence. Violence is a huge detriment to the community, especially affecting the health and in some cases the life expectancy of young black males. And so this is something that is definitely on the forefront of what I'm fighting for down at City Hall. But trying to get the same protections, the same investment in these communities, and ultimately, besides just economic equality, we want all citizens to be seen as equal mm-hmm. and that their lives to be seen as valuable as anybody else's, and that a loss of a young person's life or of a family is not experiencing the same quality of life in a neighborhood in North St. Louis, it should be a priority for the city to remedy that situation.
And that takes us back, in a sense, to the economic issue, because generally crime and violence are an offspring of that. Melody, do you have a sense that the Affordable Care Act is going to help and change what we're talking about here?
It's going to help some. I mean, there's no one save all legislation and definitely not the Affordable Care Act as it's been vetted and pushed out to the public. But it's going to help some. One of the things it's going to do is it's going to make a lot of preventive services free for a lot of people. And it's going to give a lot of people who don't currently have health insurance access to health insurance. It also makes sure that we collect certain data. One of the things we struggled with, even as we were doing our analysis, is that there really is a lack of data on some of these issues here in St. Louis. And what the Affordable Care Act will afford researchers like us is access to some of the data so we can paint real pictures of what's going on in real time.
But, you know, the expansion of the Affordable Care Act can be even more beneficial if we actually expand Medicaid in the state of Missouri. And so we won't really experience that big benefit until the state legislature does their part.
Doesn't that take us back to what we were talking about before, about the fact that the people for whom this Medicaid is intended are invisible?
Yes. Yeah. And that's exactly how I would describe them, is invisible, especially when it comes to the state government.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts? Keon, do you have thoughts about the Affordable Care Act and its ramifications?
Sure. I mean, I think in terms of just thinking about invisible populations, some of the other work that I do on black men's health, that's a big group that does not use healthcare services, you know, or often uses emergency room services as a primary source.
Or jails.
Or jails. And that's one of the interesting things about Medicaid expansion is that it would actually allow for those who were incarcerated to get health care health care coverage. But being in a state that's not expanding Medicaid, there are a lot of people, and especially men and African-American men, who will not receive the benefits of that.
My number may be off, but it seems to me that the number was about 300,000. Impacted by the state's position on Medicaid.
And I think we should be clear that it's not going to be all African-Americans in North St. Louis.
Absolutely.
That the impact of this, the benefit of this, would benefit lots of people across the state of Missouri.
That's a point that I wanted to make also, because what we're talking about here in the north side, if we're going to use that as our example, north of the Del Mar Divide, that the same thing is going on in rural parts of the state, where you have the same kind of economic conditions mm-hmm. and the same kind of lack of resources conditions. It's an issue that affects black and white, needless to say.
Correct.
Absolutely. Okay. I mean, even I was listening to the news this morning, and I can't remember the city, but there's a school district that the teachers are protesting about the lack of benefits and resources. And one of the things that they mentioned was health care. And I said, wow, what an interesting thing for them to have to fight for, given this climate where we do have the Affordable Care Act. And is the Affordable Care Act, will it be an opportunity to help people like, you know, groups like teachers, et cetera, who are fighting for better health coverage. And so that's a question for us to kind of continue to think about, because it does affect not just black people, but affects white people and affects people really across class lines.
We have a number of people calling and want to get into the conversation. But I just want to ask before we go to the phones, is there a dollar figure that we could assign to the fact that we're not taking care of people who need the care, what it is costing us otherwise, I'm talking about the emergency room costs and other costs that we are paying for this. Is there a dollar figure?
I don't think there's a definite dollar figure, but it definitely costs our city in so many different ways. You know, I go back to the quality of life issues. You know, we spend so much money investing in affluent areas in the city to attract new people. Over this last census, we saw that while we were spending all this money and attracted about 20,000 new folks to these areas, we lost about 50,000 in the areas that we neglect. And so if the quality of life is not good for the existing population we have that live in these neighborhoods, they will continue to leave the city, many of them going to North County looking for better lives or other places. And that hurts the city because we continue to lose population.
And, of course, we're all well aware of the fact that emergency room visits of the kind that we've talked about are costly, and they cost us all in higher insurance rates and all the rest of it. Melody?
I think it's hard to quantify. There's some things that we can quantify, like the cost of emergency room visits. Yeah. But when we talk about segregation, it's more than just the physical isolation of people. It's isolation from opportunity and opportunity structures. And you can't quantify lost opportunity. That's mm-hmm. just something that we really can't put a dollar figure on.
That's great.
Until the people who have lost the opportunity start paying taxes, and we can see a little more money in the public coffers, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
Right. Let's go to the phones. We have a number of callers, as I indicated. We'll start with Jeff calling from St. Louis. Jeff, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Two points. The first one is that a lot of the problem is exacerbated by some of our elected officials. I don't know how much people were paying attention, but last April, in the aldermanic meetings, there was kind of an uproar among some white South St. Louis aldermen that they thought that some of the committee assignments were overly represented by blacks. And Antonio French argued that we have a situation where a bill can be passed in the city without a single African-American legislator supporting it, and that the only way to achieve the effective proportionate representation is at the committee level. But if you look at the actual breakdown of the committees, it's not really – there isn't that huge, you know, disparity. But I've personally heard some white aldermen, you know, talk of this as us versus them, us versus them. They want to take over. They want everything. It's really a outdated backward mentality, and the constituents of their wards – need to either they need to realize that this affects the whole city, not just certain neighborhoods, and they need to hold these aldermen to task, and failing that, elect different ones. The other thing is last April, July, the Atlantic Monthly published a report talking about how life expectancies are drastically different, not just between cities, but even between neighborhoods, and the challenged neighborhoods obviously having the lowest. And they argued for an approach to our challenged neighborhoods that would be similar to how we approach developing countries like Haiti, where we import strategies that are working in those areas into our cities, like leveraging community health workers and not just highly trained doctors. And it's an approach I've suggested in the past that would be similar to Chief Dotson's focus on hotspot policing. We need to hotspot health care and neighborhood development. But those are my two
points.
I
like that.
Jeff, thank you so much for the call. We'll start it with Alderman French. He took some exception to the way committee assignments are made and the way the
applauding the way the committee assignments were made, just because as the caller pointed out, You know, right now we have in the city of St. Louis, according to the last census, there are about 20,000 more African Americans than any other group in the city. However, in our legislative branch, we're down to just 11 of 28 aldermen. So what the caller was pointing out was that, we are at a point now where there really does not need to be one single African American vote to pass legislation. And so if our other colleagues don't see the need to have some equality, see the need to eliminate some disparities, to see how it's in the betterment of the entire city that all sides are represented, then we could have a bad situation. And so I applauded at the time the president of the Board of Aldermen for racially balancing the committees. And so that has been good for the African-American community. But it is true that a lot of times we are fighting old way of thinking, them versus us. And in the process, we're just losing a lot of people, you know, a lot of people. And sometimes we lose sight of the racial dynamics of the city, but also the economic dynamics of the city. You know, we are a city made up of working class and poor folks for the most part. And our government and our laws need to reflect that sometimes. And we need to reach out and help pull each other up instead of just keep fighting each other, like as they say, crabs in a barrel, just pulling each other down. So
that's quite a visual.
Yeah. I kind of wanted to speak to the attitude that the caller talked about, that undercurrent that happens. A couple of years back, the guy who was the executive producer of KTVI or Fox News, we gave them an award because when he tried to relocate to the city from Long Beach, California, to be their new station chief or whatever, his private relocation company wouldn't let him use his package to come to U City where he wanted to come. He loved the Loop and Blueberry Hill, and he was so excited to live in an area with that kind of diversity in music and food. And they kind of encouraged him to be more like in Chesterfield or West County, and he didn't want to do it. And finally he had to say, you know what, I'm not going to take the job in St. Louis if you don't let me go to the Loop. And they finally allowed him to go to U City, but they also relocated him in a more segregated part of U City, a more affluent area. So he kind of hit the ground with a different understanding about St. Louis, and this was for a very conservative station. And we noticed that when it comes to relocation from big companies like that bring people to St. Louis, those are private relocation firms really start and a kind of a undercurrent of dialogue with the people who are moving to St. Louis because they do relocate them in areas that they consider to be safe. And so they steer them away from certain areas. And there's not a whole lot you can do about that because it's a private mm-hmm. company. But it kind of starts that attitude going when people come in from other cities to work.
Kind of a subtle indoctrination maybe before they even get here. Well, let's turn to Melody and Keon. Turn to you for the idea of hotspot health care, such as the caller suggested, such as Chief Dotson's doing now with crime.
One of the things I think is the caller was, you know, very correct about is that in many of our cities, whether they're urban or rural, many parts of them kind of look like third world countries to some extent. And we are not really addressing the issues there in kind of that hotspot way or thinking about really culturally appropriate ways to address health concerns. He mentioned community health workers or lay health advisors as an opportunity to do that. And some of public health tries to use those models, and we've had some successes in using those models. And there could be opportunities for us to kind of expand those opportunities instead of just looking at, you know, here's the big thing. Let's build another hospital. But maybe there's some intermediary kinds of processes or structures that we can implement.
There's so many things that go into health. And so, yes, we could build a health facility, but we also need to build a supermarket. We need a place for physical activity. We need a place for economic and educational opportunity. So if we're going to do this sort of hot spot healthcare, we need to think about health in a broader perspective and really build communities to be healthier, safer places.
You know, I think what just 1 second, Antonio. I think one of the things he was saying was not necessarily building a new hospital, but you know, perhaps bringing in physicians, young physicians who are just getting their start, tied into scholarships or something like that, mm-hmm. or you know, having storefront facilities available that mm-hmm. in neighborhoods and areas where they're really necessary. I mean, that would seem to make some sense, and I think maybe that's what the caller was talking about.
No, I agree. It's not just about health care or building new structures, but in many ways kind of building a different sense of what health means and how we can address health from a perspective that respects those people who live in those communities. And so, yeah, we could use a number of opportunities that, you know, for example, physicians get some benefit from moving to underserved areas. Well, we have a lot of urban underserved areas as well that we could.
That's correct.
You know, that we could, you know, send physicians into to build small clinics and support them in that kind of way.
Exactly. And have them live there, too. Don't just go and serve them. Actually, get a house over there. Yeah. That'd be great.
Antonio Fish, I thought you started to say something.
I think there are a couple of ways that the hotspot analogy is appropriate, and in some ways it's not. I mean, first, you know, healthcare is not one of these things that, like, it flares up and then you deal with it. It should be something that we are always conscious of and we're always dealing with. But if it is an appropriate analogy, it's that we should recognize where our emergencies are. You know, for instance, the closing of the Connect Care facility is a big crisis that's going to affect our community for many, many months and years. We don't even know how seriously that's going to affect us. But that if there is a hot spot, that's it right now, because now we have a huge void to fill.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I want to take another call before our next break. And Tamara is with us from North St. Louis. Tamara, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for having me. I appreciate your show. Thank you, your guest today, for taking time out to address the public and inform us. I live in the north of the city, and I just wanted to talk about that urgent care issue. I actually head all the way out to Manchester Road in the county for urgent care for two reasons. When I do a Google search for Urgent Care St. Louis, the only city address that comes up is one that's 5535 Delmar Boulevard. You've talked about the Delmar Divide. But as a tech, you know, a member of this tech generation, there's 7 Google reviews for that urgent care center, and they all speak to a staff that may be lazy or uninterested or, you know, long time waits. But the urgent care center that I head out to in Manchester, that had 220 Google reviewers with a 4.6 scale. So, you know, as a resident of the North City, I agree with one of your other guests which said it's not just an economics issue. Yeah, put an urgent care here, but make sure that it's a quality urgent care where I can go in, I can make my appointments online. I know I won't be waiting, you know, 45 minutes to see a doctor. The people that come in smile and care about me as an African-American customer, not because I'm African-American, but just because I'm a customer who needs care. Mm. So I think this issue of this constant neglect of the north of the city is very relevant, and this issue that we don't just need money thrown at this, you know, segregation of health care. We really need training and care for the constituents that live in this part of the city. And I'll take your comments off air.
Thank you so much. Melody, she's certainly making the point that you made earlier on. You can't disagree with what she's saying.
No, I completely agree. Yeah.
That's right. And sadly, the facility that she's talking about that got the bad reviews was the only one there, and it is now closed. That was the Connect Care facility on Delmar. And so she is completely right. It's not just about having a facility there. It's about having the same quality of service as you would get anywhere else. And that's the same whether we're talking about grocery stores or healthcare facilities or you know, car washes, you know, whatever. People want to be treated the same no matter where they live.
We are talking about healthcare as it relates to, or does not relate, perhaps is a better put, to a segregated community. It's the result of the For Sake of All study, which is an interdisciplinary study that has just put out its fourth brief talking about healthcare's impact in a segregated community. My guests in studio are Professor Melody Goodman of Washington University, Keon Gilbert, professor at St. Louis University, Will Jordan, executive director of the Metropolitan St. Louis Equal Housing Opportunity Council, and 21st Ward St. Louis Alderman Antonio French. Back to take your calls in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation about the impact on health care in a segregated community. And we have a number of callers. I want to get to as many of them as we can. As time allows, let's begin with Mike from Midtown. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. One thing I want to say, this lady said the quality of care at the Connect Care was deficient. I like to debate on that. I know people have been going there for 10 and 15 years, and the quality of care that they've been receiving was great. And then so far, all this negativity concerning on the north side of Delmar, I want to give a shout-out to Frank Williamson and Terry Kennedy. Both of them have been my aldermen, and I'm looking at what the development that Terry Kennedy has done in North Sarah. You look at Rankin and look at all the housing that's being built up and down various streets, whether it's West Bell, Finney, or you go on the off of Devolver and Delmore. You got black folks building $300,000 homes in that area. You look at Hamilton and Delmore, and going back, you got plenty of money in development. So it's all this negativity and so forth, segregation. Go to Memphis. Go to Nashville. Go to Chicago. It's just as racist and segregated as anywhere else. So I love my city. All this negative. There's a lot of things going on in North St. Louis for the people that don't know about it. Look at, like I said, all these are being built on Delmar and Kings Highway. That's food.
Mike, okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for the call. Antonio French, I don't think anybody is saying, you know, that North St. Louis is bad. We're saying there's some things that could be improved.
Let me tell you something. North St. Louis is my home, and I work every day to try to improve my community. So a lot of good things are going on. And I don't think anybody who loves this city and who acts as a cheerleader for our city should feel that taking an honest look at our problems is in any way taking away from the positives of our city. What we know is that a lot of stuff is happening, especially in that slightly north of Del Mar area. Again, I agree with the caller. The alderman in the 26th ward and the alderman in the 18th ward have done a great job at expanding the progress in their wards. But I think, you know, when we have these discussions, sometimes we should take some emotion out of it and look at the data. The caller mentioned the new Aldi's that opened up on Kings Highway and Del Mar. That's a great addition. But we should also note that at the same time that Aldi's closed, the Aldi's just a few blocks away on North Kings Highway at the Roberts facility closed. Mm-hmm. So we are at a zero sum game there for our Aldi's. And so so every new development that happens in the city, we should applaud and we should pat ourselves on the back. But we should also recognize the people that are continuing leaving neighborhoods like College Hill, like the Ville neighborhood, who are just vacating our city. And this is how we got caught off guard last time when the last census came out. We've been so focused on all the positive stuff that's been happening that we didn't notice the 50,000 people leaving out the back door. Mm-hmm. And we should pay close attention to every part of our city. It's a relatively small city. And so we can't just write off large parts of our geography.
And getting smaller, unfortunately, which is part of the problem. Another call, Jeanette in St. Louis. It's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, Don. It's Jeanette Mott-Oxford from Missouri Association for Social Welfare.
Hi.
I just think it's kind of ironic that with this situation where we could cover 300,000 people with Medicaid expansion, there's no sense of urgency, and we can't call a special session to take care of something like that, but we can have a special session to come up with a corporate welfare package for Boeing. I think our priorities are really in the wrong place.
Jeanette, thanks for the call. Comment, anyone?
Yeah, that's a good point, Jeanette. This is Will Jordan and EHOC, and we noticed that as well, that one of the things that we know is that people don't want to make a big investment in poor people because poor people can't pay you back. But I can tell you that our society, the United States, really is built on creating opportunities for those very poor people, and that's really what made our nation great. And I think that we need to remember how necessary it is to make opportunities for people who can't pay you back.
There's the invisibility quotient once again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you have time for one more quick thing?
Sure.
I think food deserts may be a phrase that we should give up. My friend Beth Lowe, who used to be a state representative, now works for a food group in Kansas City, and she says that desert seems to imply it's a natural thing in geography somehow, and food deserts really relate to oppression that's connected to race, to class, to gender. I've started saying the food Bermuda Triangle, because you're more likely to not have the food you need if you're non-white, if you're poor, and if you're female.
Wow. Jeanette, thanks so much for the call. She has a point.
She does.
There's another term that's used in connection with food that I really dislike, and that is food insecurity. Instead of saying people are hungry, there's food insecure. It's kind of sanitizing a problem in 21st century America. No comment. Let's move ahead and more phone calls. Ron in St. Louis, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I'm a member of the community partnership team for the sake of all, and I applaud all the work that is being done and bringing this to the public's attention, because the whole purpose of the effort is to show that basically that everybody can benefit if we address the health care issues of poor people. And, you know, until we deal with the issues of institutional and structural racism, and as well as subliminal racism among people in the healthcare industry, we're not really going to solve this problem. But I think that putting the word out there that, you know, over the long term, our St. Louis region is only going to move forward if it's for the sake of all. And we need to institute policies, because it's policy that makes the difference in terms of what happens on the ground. So, and, you know, there's an interesting article in ProPublica about housing discrimination and HUD that shows that since HUD has been in existence, their affirmative taking action on housing discrimination has been lax. So, you know, as long as poor people are isolated from the mainstream doesn't have any interest in what happens to them. They don't see it. They don't feel it. So I think that studies like this and the work For Sake of All is doing, EHOC, is really what needs to happen, and this voice needs to be heard everywhere, every day. And Jeanette is right. I mean, you know, racism is a part of it. Most of the low-income white people in the St. Louis area live in and go to middle-class schools. Most of the low-income African-American children live in and go to low-income schools. It's no accident. So let's keep working. Let's move forward.
Ron, thank you so much for the call. Any comment to Ron?
Yeah, I wanted to say, you know, as far as the comment about, you know, HUD is very aware of what these, what ProPublica and some of the Bloomberg has put out these reports about HUD's policies and how they've affected these communities that we are talking about today. And they don't want that stigma. They really are looking at more innovative ways to spend their money so that they don't create a problem. And that's one of the things that they put us on board to do. They fund us to kind of help them to look at how they're spending their money and what things really need to be talked about in a new way, a new discussion. And this is a part of it, looking at housing segregation from a different perspective and a holistic way, and finding ways to integrate everything from transportation to banking to services, not just trying to find ways to integrate everything, but finding ways to also make things more available for people who are going to be in this 63110 zip code. That's make everything available for everybody in that particular zip code. So I think they are very aware of that, and they don't want that stigma, and they're trying to use their partnerships to create a different paradigm.
HUD, of course, the Housing and Urban Development Department.
That's
Antonio
correct.
French, you look like you
yeah.
were getting ready to.
You know, I'm glad that Ron raised that point, and I want to thank him and Jeanette for calling. They both have been big voices in these fights for poverty issues for many years. You know, these kind of studies are very important because you know, very often poor folks in our region feel like there's no volume at which they can speak and be heard. And so for some folks, it takes seeing a study, or it takes seeing an article on the front page of the New York Times to be heard, for them to actually see this issue. And I'm appreciative to the folks who are spending a lot of their time and efforts to make these do this research and make these studies available, because it's important, and hopefully it will change some people's minds and give them a better perspective about the place we live in.
I'd like to take another call now, and we'll bring in Katie calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Katie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
This is an interesting discussion. We've heard the governmental responsibility. We've heard about the responsibility of private firms and policy. What I haven't heard mentioned in this study or in its recommendations is the impact of personal choice and cultural change in getting better health care to people in the communities in which they're discussing.
What do you mean by that, Katie?
I'm talking about such factors as smoking and obesity and health choices, sedentary lifestyles, and asking whether those were considered as part of the study, as part of the overall study.
Thanks for the call. Melody, can you comment?
So the fifth brief, which was just released, focuses on chronic disease. And so Drs. Bettina Drake and Dr. Keith Elder worked on that brief, which focuses on all those chronic disease issues. We were really sort of interested in segregation. And, you know, we agree that there's some personal responsibility, but we also have to remember obesity is a disease of the poor, right? It is cheaper to eat unhealthy than it is to eat healthy.
That's right.
And if you have a family that you have to feed, you have have to make some decisions about, you know, it's not that health isn't a priority, but food is, right, and dinner is. And so some people are forced into making decisions that are not always the best personal decisions for them health-wise, but are the best financially.
Kian?
Sure. I think one of the things that is important about this particular brief, as Melody mentioned, is that, you know, we're looking at segregation and we're looking at these structural issues that actually affect personal choice in a number of ways. And so if I'm a physician or even a public health researcher and I say physical activity is important to your health and you know you don't live in a neighborhood where you have sidewalks and you can't afford a gym, then that affects your personal choice. And so we're not negating that personal choice is a part of it, but we're trying to suggest or at least think about, well, how can we change certain structures that will influence better personal choices and decisions?
That brings us to recommendations. We've spent a lot of time talking about the problems, but you do have recommendations, things that can be done. Let me start with you, Kian Gilbert, with regard to some of the things you're proposing to deal with this.
Sure. So, I mean, we've talked about, you know, full service grocery stores as an option. We've even talked about, you know, the structures of neighborhoods and thinking about, you know, sidewalks. We even talked a little bit about housing choice. And so one of the things that we were very careful about was not saying that we needed to take all the people out of these neighborhoods and move them somewhere else. We don't believe that that is the real that's one of the most viable solution. But how can we better enhance and better resource the neighborhoods that people live in? And by encouraging mixed income use of neighborhoods, mm-hmm. in supporting businesses going into neighborhoods so that people can get better jobs, so they could be able to afford health care and all of these other things that we've talked about in terms of being able to afford better food choices as well.
Melody Goodman, one of the issues, of course, is investment to make mm-hmm. that happen.
You know, I think investment is important. I think it's also important to note that, like Dr. Gilbert said, integration is not the answer. That's not what we're suggesting. What we're suggesting is to make healthy communities all across St. Louis and to put things in every community that allows those communities to be helpful. And we also want to make sure that it's important to know that the people who have historically lived in these communities have the opportunity to stay in those communities if they so choose or move to different communities. But we don't want to force people out of communities that they've lived in for a long time in our process of trying to make these healthier spaces.
That's right. That's right. And I really like that point of the making these communities a better place to live, regardless of what choices people make as to moving out of the community. We want to make it a viable place. If you notice that there is a new bank across the street on West Florissant from the Walmart and the Sam's, that's the result of some of the work that a group called SLECRA and Metro St. Louis Equal Housing Opportunity did to get that bank to move into there in Ferguson. And it's great. They're doing great. The bank, it's First National Bank. They're doing excellent. And also there's another bank on Page there in Pagedale. And they're doing great, Midwest Bank. And each one of those banks are there now in communities that didn't have banks, communities that were underbanked. And so we want to see more investment because now there's a QT across the street from that bank.
I can remember when the Gateway Bank was the only bank north of Del Mar.
That's right. That's right.
Antonio French, time is winding down. But if you could wave your magic wand, what would you do?
You know, I think these studies are very important because, you know, the effect that I hope that they will have is that we start looking at every neighborhood is equal and look at the quality of life in each neighborhood. The title of the study, for the sake of all, is very appropriate to the city of St. Louis. You know, we are only as strong as our weakest neighborhood. And especially regarding the city, you know, it's not enough just for some people to be thriving in this city. If so many are left behind, then we are failing as a city. And so right now we've left so many neighborhoods behind, and the quality of life is not what we would consider, what everyone would consider a place where they would want to live. And so until we do that for our entire neighborhood, every neighborhood in the city of St. Louis, then we won't reach the heights that we all want to reach together.
Okay. Only have a minute left, and I'll very quickly, Melody, I'll ask you. One of your recommendations is for more media support. What precisely do you mean by that?
We want to make sure that, you know, one, we get the word out. Two, people know how to access information and that we get information about where resources are and where people can go. And the media plays a key role in that. That's how a lot of us get information. And so we want to make sure that they're partners with us to get health information to people.
Is it possible, Kian Gilbert, to be optimistic in 30 seconds that your recommendations would be accepted and this will change quickly?
quickly is the important key word there. These problems have, you know, developed over time, and so it certainly will take some time. One of the things that we hope that what comes from these briefs is that we can ignite conversations like this and ignite people coming together to actually address a small or large part of the problem.
That's Professor Keon Gilbert of St. Louis University. Also with us in studio is Melody Goodman of Washington University, Will Jordan, Executive Director of the Metropolitan St. Louis Equal Housing Opportunity Council, and 21st Alderman Antonio French. Thank you so much for being with us. Good discussion.
Thank you.
All too quickly over with, but thank you all for being with us. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the Council on Islamic Relations' second report on Islamophobia, the practice of prejudice against hatred for or fear of Muslims or ethnic groups perceived to be Muslim, and the organization's efforts to counter all of this. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.